For the first time since last week, Josh Nason's Punch-Out has returned. Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason. I'm a writer, editor, and podcaster for WrestlingObserver.com, where you are likely hearing my dulcet tones right now. Hope you guys are doing great wherever you are in the world. And as we approach the end of this horrendous year that was 2020, and it is still 2020 for another couple weeks, we begin our four-part look back at the year that was in the world of mixed martial arts, UFC, Bellator, and a few things in between. And I do this always with Paul Fontaine, who is a writer for this here website and also does some work for Fight Game Media, which he talks a little bit about on the show. So what we do is we basically go through all the major headlines for the month, for January, February, March, and then so on and so forth, and then talk, kind of breaks them down, talk about the kind of what the biggest story was of the month, the biggest fights, biggest events, all that. And it's crazy because we say this every year. There's so many things that happen that we just absolutely forget about. And especially a year like this where our minds just, you know, completely went blank. This was quite a year to look back to. And this first segment, this first podcast, January, February, March, you know, January, February was relatively normal here in the U.S. And then in March, as you'll hear about, that's when the concerns about the coronavirus hit and then hit us hard near the end of March. And I go through this timeline in order of all these things that happened, even after, I mean, I compiled all this, and even afterward, my head was like just like crazy. It's just, it's insane. I can't wait for you guys to hear about it. And then I'm really looking forward to part two, of course, which will be later next week, which goes into really kind of the beginning of the UFC and MMA in the coronavirus era, including a very bad decision to try to run Tachi Palace, but we'll get to that in part two. But this one, January, February, March, all kinds of stuff. If you're an MMA fan, you guys will enjoy this. And yeah, check it out right now. Myself, Paul Fontaine, January, February, March, MMA Year in Review starts now. Well, this godforsaken year is almost over, thank God. And we're out. But one of the best things about the year is one of my favorite things is the year in review, all the things that happened. And yes, even though we're in a pandemic and MMA took a long pause, we did have a lot of fights and a lot of things happening, especially in the first 3 months of the year when we really didn't know this thing was coming, or we didn't, or supposedly didn't know, or whatever you want to call it. But now, in how things played out, I was reading over these things today for January, February, and March, and it was pretty wild. Joining me as always, as he has the past couple of years for all four of these episodes, is Paul Fontaine. And since the last time we talked, you know, Paul's still doing the work for us, doing recaps on the select UFC shows, and also all these ratings posts for WWE and AEW, and even some Impact. And all this stuff. And then also, he has launched his own podcast. He and Ryan Frederick, who also does some recaps for us on this here website on Fight Game Media via their Patreon. You can find that very easily. Just search for Fight Game Media on Patreon. Very easy to find. And you can check out their podcast, which is on the $10 subscription tier. And you guys can obviously check that out. So Paul Fontaine, welcome back. Almost happy new year, and glad that we're able to talk. No illnesses, no problems, and hopefully things are good for now as the world crumbles around us.
Yeah, no, it's we've made it through so far, and sounds like a vaccine's on the way, hopefully. Yep. So I think we're probably closer to the end of this than the beginning, is my hope. And it's nice to have, some normalcy back in life, talking about the year that was and being reminded of what it was like pre-COVID on this show.
That's right. That's right. We'll get right to it because there's a lot, obviously, to delve into, especially in March. So let's start with January. So as always, we kind of lead off with what I think were some of the top stories, events, talking points of the month, and then we kind of go over a lot of the other bullet points and as well. Probably the top, I think, obviously, was the return of Conor McGregor, UFC 246. I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago at this point, but finally making his return and quick knockout of Vidal Cerrone. We didn't see him that long, but obviously, quick, I believe it was under a minute. If I remember right, and it was just like, wow, the old tropes of the old Conor's back and all this, and whatever. But it was nice to have him back in there. And obviously a quick victory. I believe I was at welterweight, if I am remembering it right. But I mean, it was obviously good to have him back. This was after all the, you know, the sexual assault issues with the reported by the New York Times or the Irish Times and everything on, and something that really didn't, I think, come to a conclusion, or it's just one of these, you know, the normal McGregor stuff, right? So there was a reporter actually brought it up at a press conference. It was kind of one of the first times I actually talked to McGregor publicly about this. And fans that were there decided to boo, which was, you know, really classy, and trying just to get him to ask a question, a simple thing. Anyway, so Conor McGregor returning. Also on the show, Roxanne Modafferi. Big upset win over Macy Barber. This was a huge upset. Macy Barber, obviously a prospect on the rise and kind of one of the female stars that we thought were going to kind of kick up to the next level at the beginning of the year, and having a major setback, as a lot of superstars have in their careers, tearing her ACL in the process. So a terrible night for Macy Barber against the eternal Roxanne Modafferi. And then Carlos de Diego Ferreira submitting Anthony Pettis in the second round. That's kind of this weird fight that just kind of came together, and Ferreira submitting the former lightweight champion there. And then Holly Holm returning and defeating Raquel Rocky Pennington in a very boring fight. And afterwards, obviously, some of the other notes here, I talk about the McGregor sexual assault stuff not being brought up and really kind of being danced around by the media. Dana White was hell-bent still on making this idea of Khabib versus McGregor 2 and not having Masvidal fight McGregor, which a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads about, because it seemed like a natural fight to make after this. Both guys won. It would have been huge at the box office, but really seemed insistent on that Khabib fight too, which a lot of people they would watch it, but based on the results of the first one, you know, they weren't exactly clamoring for it. We'll get to that a little bit later. And then also afterwards, and this is kind of the, you know, this issue with the ESPN era, is you have guys like Stephen A. Smith weighing in on MMA and especially UFC. You know, he was talking about, Donald Cerrone quitting in there, and just there was this whole dust up, and really, you know, to a new audience that may have not really known who he was. I mean, just kind of just hurting his reputation big time. So Cerrone had to respond to this stuff. Joe Rogan was involved, and those guys were kind of, you know, Stephen A. Smith and Joe Rogan are kind of going at each other via social media and clips and their various shows and all that stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of things that kind of happen around this before and afterwards. But yeah, at the beginning of the year, we kicked it off with, yeah, Conor McGregor, the king, returned.
Yeah. It seems like a lifetime ago, like you said. And I know coming into this fight, we were looking at, you know, Conor wanted to have three fights this year, and we kind of saw a clear path of how that would happen. And even after this fight was over, you know, he didn't take any damage. It was pretty quick, showed it a ton of business. So there was no reason to think that he wouldn't come back. You know, probably, you know, you would think maybe July International Fight Week and then December year end show, you know, probably. And, you know, in a perfect world, that's what would have happened. And as we know, 2020 was anything but perfect. So, I had to laugh at this Stephen A. Smith stuff, because I even remember even coming into the fight where he was basically, he was kind of talking about Cerrone like he was a, you know, you're a ham and egg, or, you know, whatever the term is in boxing, for, you know, a punching bag. Basically just a setup guy for McGregor coming in on, you know, after a long time off. And he was just basically there to, you know, to get Conor ready for the bigger fights. And I mean, that's kind of what it was, but Cerrone is a lot bigger than that. You know, I don't know what the boxing equivalent would be. I don't really know boxing that well, but he was definitely not what Cerrone was describing, or sorry, what Stephen A. Smith was describing. But given his knowledge of the sport and probably just looking at the record and, you know, seeing that he had lost three in a row and not realizing that, you know, all three guys were basically champions. And Cerrone, you know, is still capable of beating 90% of the guys in his division. You know, it's just that he'll take any fight at any time. And so, yeah, it's you know, it's unfortunate the way it ended, and really, like, the whole year for Cerrone has not been great. He hasn't won at all this year, despite fighting three times. And then the rest of the show, like, you kind of ran it down. And, you know, the idea when you have a show like this that you know is going to get a ton of eyeballs is you want somebody on the undercard to make an impression and, you know, kind of rise their stock in front of more people to watch than you're ever going to see. And unfortunately, I don't think we really got that, you know, because I honestly don't remember any of this. Now, a lot of it is because of, you know, everything that's gone on since then. But even just looking at the results, like, I don't see anything on here that would just have struck you. The one thing, and you didn't mention it, was Alexei Olenek. You know, had a pretty impressive submission on the main card, and he was the first guy to win an MMA fight in what, 4 different decades.
That's right.
So, and then, you know, I think Andrei Arlovsky matched him at that later on in the year. And, you know, the first guy, well, yeah, this is in January of 2020, so that's why he's the first, and we don't have too many guys from the 80s still kicking around. So, you know, that was pretty much the only memorable thing. Like, I'm a big fan of Roxanne Modafferi, so I was really excited about that, but I don't think anybody watched that fight and just thought, oh, wow, here's a future superstar. You know, she's a MMA legend, pioneer, I guess would be a better way to put it. The only thing that happened there was you took down a potential you know, star, maybe even superstar in Macy Barber, given her first loss and kind of a boring fight to a non-contender. You know, and Anthony Pettis, Diego Fajeia, like, you know, I mean, it was a good win for Fajeia, but I don't think he really, his stock didn't really improve after it.
So,
I mean, it was there. It was a good fight. It was fun. Connor looked great. Like, I think we even talked about this in our last show that we did together, you know, kind of when we were reviewing the last quarter of the year and talking about this fight. And I just thought in the buildup, he just looked more focused, more serious than he'd looked probably since the Mendez fight. And I was quite confident that, you know, the result was going to be quick and easy for Connor, and that's what it was. So it was successful in that sense. It did 1 million buys on pay-per-view, huge rating on the prelims for ESPN. So really no complaints. And honestly, this was it's kind of the peak of the year in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I remember it took us a long time to get this fight because this fight was rumored. We talked about when we did the 2019 year interview. We finally got there, finally got the fight. And then I remember I forgot about the Connor quote unquote season. He was going to have three fights. It was this fight. I think he was talking about a Masvidal fight and then a Khabib rematch, I think. And I was like, wow, that sounds good. And I, for some reason, my mind just kind of, wow, that would be kind of good. Maybe he's serious about doing this. Of course, as we sit here now, it looks like we're going to get this fight. Obviously we're going to hopefully, knock on wood, get a fight in January. So it looks like at this point we're down to one Connor fight a year, maybe two if we're lucky. But yeah, this is quite a way to kick off the year. Let's go into these other chunks of January. We'll go to this first chunk here down the list. And this is, I kind of try to break these up by like results, USADA stuff, and then some movements and then kind of like future fights. So we'll go this first chunk here, all happening in January 2019. So 2020, God, I wish it was 2019. Bellator 238, Cyborg, Justino. Chris Cyborg Justino returning, debuting rather, for Bellator, dominating Julia Budd to win the featherweight title by TKO. She became a Triple Crown champion, winning in Strikeforce, UFC, and then also Bellator as well. She was a UFC champion, right? Why am I completely blank? The first featherweight. God, I don't know. This year is completely screwed my mind up. Yeah, Triple Crown champion there. And I believe, was she an Invicta champion as well?
Grand Slam, actually.
Grand Slam. Yeah, look at that. So Aaron Pico, Dave Meltzer favorite, big knockout win on the undercard, started to kind of rebuild his resume. Turned out to be a pretty good year for him. We'll talk more about him in these later shows. AJ McKee kicking off the year right, defeating Darren Caldwell and advancing in the featherweight tournament. UFC Raleigh, when they used to have shows in front of fans. Curtis Blaydes winning via second round TKO over Junior Dos Santos. And then Michael Chiesa dominating Rafael Dos Anjos and then calling out Colby Covington for a fight after that. Conor McGregor in the run-up to the Cerrone fight saying that he made $50 million for the Khabib fight. All right, no one seemed to believe that. Dana White saying that at the time, Justin Gaethje had turned down several fights and was kind of doing that Dana White thing of kind of downplaying him in the media. And I throw that in there because it was interesting to see where things turned out later in the year when he became a fan favorite and a Dana White favorite as well. At this point, he was still pushing the Zuffa boxing deal, providing quote-unquote value for the Mayweather-Pacquiao rematch. I was being talked about that time. We see how that turned out. Jessica Penne retiring due to USADA, quote-unquote, bullying. And there was a whole story there about, I think there's a lot of these athletes have talked about with USADA, a lot of issues and problems and not various. I say Tom Lawler, enough said there. Diego Sanchez getting busted getting suspended 3 months for taking Ostarine. Anthony Pettis.
Waller.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. 3 months. Yeah. Boy, but he wishes it 3 months. Anthony Pettis suing USADA over a hand laceration caused by, I believe, during the testing or what have you. Fabricio Werdum getting reduced USADA suspension for giving up information, being a snitch, aka the John Jones role. I already got the Diego Sanchez one. Viacom decided they were going to move Bellator under Showtime's Steven Espinoza and a little bit of a corporate restructuring there. So far to date, nothing's really come of that, but it's just kind of a little thing to file in the back of the way, file in the back of your head for the future. And Paige Van Zandt, big surprise, she got hurt and she was out of what was to be the final fight of her contract against Amanda Ribas. That fight would be rescheduled later. And then Robert Whittaker had to drop out of UFC 248 due to personal reasons, and we learned a lot about him throughout the year, and obviously he came back very strong. Anything that catches your eye in that first section?
Well, the Bellator, when you talk, like, I think that was maybe the first step in what ended up happening with them, which is, you know, they're not really on a network that anybody watches. I don't know if that was part of this restructuring. They got moved off of the former Spike Paramount Network to CBS Sports Network, which I assume is in the same family of Viacom networks as Showtime would be, kind of maybe their, you know, their cable division as opposed to their premium. And that has, you know, was kind of trumpeted as being a big move for Bellator. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, later in the year. But it's really like made Bellator kind of almost be, I mean, it's there. They have a show tonight as we record. I'm not sure when this is going to air, but I mean, nobody but the hardcores even knows it's happening. And at the beginning of the year, things looked really good for them. I mean, you had that featherweight tournament going on. I remember they had that really fun kind of the drawing where everyone got to pick their opponents and their dates and all that, which, yeah. I mean, none of that ever ended up happening, but it was fun to watch. And then you had Aaron Pico rehabbing his career. You had Chris Cyborg, you know, who came in as the highest paid women in combat sports history, according to Scott Coker, and she looked real good. And things were looking up for them. And, you know, we talk about Bellator a lot on these recap shows just because I don't think people talked about them enough. But this year, I feel like anything we talk about them might be almost too much. And then the other stuff was just, you know, the whole USADA stuff and the poor people that lost significant portions of their career or spent a lot of money to have their sentences reduced. You know, you mentioned Lawler, I think Stephen Thompson was another one that, you know, he got his sentence reduced, but he spent a lot of money to it. Was it Tim Means?
Tim Means.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, and now it's like when they're finally admitting, yeah, we had some problems and, you know, we kind of messed up. And then you see Diego Sanchez getting 3 months, you see Jessica Penne losing her career, you know, and it's just, I don't know. Like I feel like USADA has been more trouble than it's been worth. Not that the fighters shouldn't be drug tested, and you know, and they certainly done a lot to change the way weight cutting is done, but I'm not sure it's actually improved things and it's caused a lot of issues that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Agreed. Second chunk here, UFC 248 getting the Israel Adesanya Yoel Romero title fight. Also a Yuenian Jacek versus Wiley Zhang title fight. And then, fortunately, Joanna and Jacek started to make some coronavirus jokes, some memes that made their way around. So that started to get things off, kicked off on the right foot. UFC 249 getting Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrade, the rematch. UFC 250 getting a Henry Cejudo versus Jose Aldo title fight. Even though Aldo lost in his last title fight, that went over as well as you might think. UFC London getting Tyron Woodley versus Leon Edwards as the main event. UFC Nebraska getting Glover Teixeira versus Anthony Smith as the main event. Bellator 240, I put this in there because I don't know. Brett, put a headliner. This is way too many shows. Bellator 240, headliners Brett Primus rather, versus somebody named Chris Brungard. No idea who that is. It could be fake. I could have just made that name up and no one would know any different. Demetrius Johnson was scheduled that he's going to be fighting for the one flyweight title in April against Adriano Moraes. UFC Brasilia getting Kevin Lee versus Charles Oliveira as a main event. Ryan Bader has announced he's going to be defending his light heavyweight title against Vadim Nemkov. Jorge Masvidal and Kamaru Usman getting on into it on Super Bowl Radio Row. They're promoting. I think they did Dan Le Batard show and they did some other stuff perhaps. And there was a clip that went around of them almost coming to blows. It got a lot of attention there. Dana White said, that was annoying or was disgusted by the usual stuff. Then he said they were looking to book that fight for July. So, that's how much you can believe him. Tyson Fury, the boxing star, said he wanted a quote unquote modified boxing fight with an MMA fighter in a cage. Walt Harris, after his unfortunate 2019 with his stepdaughter being found killed and just a terrible story we talked about for the 2019 shows, said he was going to plan a return for April. So everyone was excited about that or happy for him about that. Edson Barbosa dropped to 100, said he was going to drop to featherweight, 145 pounds after a long ride, long run at lightweight and things just kind of not going his way. Jordan Meehan returns and signed with Bellator. That was a bit of a surprise. One of these kids, Canadian kids that started fighting when they were 14 years old or something, got burned out of the sport and then deciding he wanted to come back. Thiago Alves said he was going to be heading to bare knuckle boxing. Okay. Uriah Faber renewed his UFC contract and was going to keep going. Josh Thompson, the former Strikeforce star, officially retiring. And finally, Bellator middleweight champion Rafael Lovato Jr. revealed he had a brain disease. And he would later, we'll talk about, was going to drop the title. But it was a pretty sad thing to hear about that. And he's okay now. And as we do more of the year, we'll talk about his potential return. But that's how we close the month of January. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I chuckled a bit at the UFC Nebraska. And the only reason for that is they aired some video packages kind of building up Anthony Smith for people who didn't know him. And they were really good, and he came off really well in them and everything like that. And then later on in the year, he was a late replacement main event in a fight a few weeks back, and they just basically re-aired all the same video packages. And I just thought that was kind of funny, and that reminded me of that. Jordan Meehan, I forgot that he had signed with Bellator, but I think I actually watched his first fight, and I'm amazed that they haven't signed his dad yet, because his dad Lee Meehan is still fighting. I think he's 45. He's a heavyweight and he fights on smaller regional shows all over Canada. Well, at least he was up until the pandemic. I haven't seen him since, but he's just a crazy personality. He's not a terribly good fighter, but he's a good promoter, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him in Bellator at some point once they get fans back. And and unfortunately those Joanna and Jacek memes didn't age very well.
Mm-mm. Well, let's go to February. The big fight event of the month was UFC 247 in Houston, Texas. John Jones edging out Dominic Reyes to retain the title in a majority decision. This was a pretty controversial one. A lot of media think that, and a lot of fans, but a lot of media also think that Reyes actually won that fight. Even after watching it again, they think he won. Very tight fight. And one of those where, the card itself, I put bad card as a question mark. I remember this was a weird show. And I remember that fight, the Jones-Reyes fight, was interesting, but it didn't really get good at all. But regardless, John Jones winning another successful title defense, rather. James Vick, if you remember this, he took a fight on 24 hours notice. On this show, Valentina Shevchenko, the women's flyweight champion, retaining with a third round victory over Caitlin Chookagian. Derek Lewis, a very, very boring win over Ilir Latifi, who I believe was making his heavyweight debut, or at least in the UFC was. There was bad judging all night. I saw some articles and headlines about that, and including one in a James Krause fight. Judge Joe Solis, this is one of the decisions that went, I believe, against Krause. He actually trained with the fighter that defeated Krause. And so it's like, well, how can this be? This wasn't found out or mentioned until afterward. I don't think a decision was ever overturned, but there was a lot of questions about Texas during this, and Texas is always one of those commissions where it's kind of this throw your hands up, shrug emoji type thing. And I remember there was a lot of chatter after the show about, can you have major title fights in the state where the commission is questionable with some of these things and is not really accountable for some of their actions and so on. So I remember a lot about that. But overall, I remember this was kind of a weird night, not really an overall great card, and it was kind of marred by some of the judging.
Yeah, and I was looking up to see what I scored that Jones fight, and I'm not listed on MMA Decisions for some reason, because I think actually what happened was I watched this fight on a delay. But Ryan Frederick from our site scored at 48-47 Jones. And in I just look back on some DMs that we sent back and forth, and I was telling him, like, you know, that fight, like, for me, it was too close to call. The first round was definitely Reyes. The last two rounds were definitely Jones. So the middle, the second and third were kind of the swing rounds, and it could have gone either way. So when they announced a 49-46 score, one of the judges, Joe Solis, like you said, I knew at that point that, okay, it's Jones's fight, because he clearly had won two rounds. But I mean, it was also one of those fights, though, where when you look at it and you say, okay, who won the fight? That's where you would have people would say Reyes, even though Jones kind of outpointed him. And the media scores it was about 2/3 for Reyes. But it was all 48-47. Every single score was 48-47 one way or the other. Mm. So, I mean, that's the definition of how close it was. And when you have a fight like that, the other thing is, and I think this maybe comes from boxing, where you got to beat the champion. So when it's a close fight, the decisions generally tend to go to the champion. And that's, again, in a lot of these judges came from boxing. So I think in the back of your head, and this came up a lot this year, I've noticed, and I've kind of been almost wanting to track it. Like when somebody has won a close round, then the next close round, the judges tend to give it to whoever they didn't give the first close round to, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, just giving it. And I think it's just a subconscious thing that you do in your head, because you think, well, I don't want this guy to be up two rounds when both rounds were so close. So, which is not the way you're supposed to judge, but that's, I think, just subconsciously, that's what people do. And I know for me, that's what I do, because I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't think this should be 2018 because it's too close for that. So I would just give the second round to whoever I didn't give the first round to a lot. And it's definitely not the correct way to score, but I'll be honest, that's what I do. And I'm not being paid to judge, so I don't have a problem with it. Other than that, the card, again, it was like that other card that we just talked about, like not a ton going on. I mean, there was another championship match, and Valentina Shevchenko looked real good, but basically just killed another contender. And on the undercard, we had another potential contender like Lauren Murphy, who at the time we didn't really think was going to be going for the title anytime soon, but almost a year later is looking like a potential title contender. And we got the debut of Chaos Williams, was really impressive knockout. So, it was a card, and it was the last one with fans, I guess, or the last pay-per-view with fans, right?
That's right. That's right. Let's go on some of the other shows that had fans. UFC Auckland, Dan Hooker defeating Paul Felder in a 5-round split decision brawl. This is a fight of the year candidate, no doubt about it. A lot of fun. Paul Felder, and we'll talk about him more in the year, but this is, and also Dan Hooker as well. These are lightweight division. It just continues to be great and pump out great fights like this. And again, not necessarily marquee in terms of box office appeal, but when it comes to like fighters on the short list of ones that you're excited to see, this one paid off. So I remember watching this live, and this was a great, great fight. UFC Rio Rancho, Jan Blachowicz knocking out Corey Anderson cold, like flatlined him, done. And then a fight of light heavyweight title contenders, almost an eliminator bout, called out John Jones, who happened to be cage side for this. And John Jones sounded interested. And obviously that would change later on. Diego Sanchez winning a bizarre DQ win over Michael Pereira. Michael Pereira is kind of this really fun guy that if he can get the talent in there with the theatrics, it's a star in the making, but has not been able to kind of put things together. Had an illegal knee. It was just a weird situation. Then, Sanchez, obviously a bizarre guy, has a very strange coach, one coach. And I remember hearing him do an interview with Luke Thomas when Luke Thomas was doing a SiriusXM show. And, it was strange. It's worth finding. And he did the media rounds in general, but his philosophies and some of the coaching I remember during the fight was very, very strange. There was very bizarre, but this was kind of the standout things from to me about UFC Rio Rancho. Dana White still was talking about the McGregor-Khabib rematch and saying that Max Holloway was going to rematch Alexander Volkanovski for the UFC featherweight title at some point. There was some discussion of also McGregor and Gaethje potentially for the summer, possibly during International Fight Week. Dana White did an appearance at a Donald Trump rally as the president was starting to kind of plan his re-election campaign at that point. Again, we talked about Yuan and Jacek doing the Xili Wang coronavirus pick and meme. That was when the virus was really kind of just a thing in China that none of us seemed to really care about over here just yet, even though some people were saying we should have been. But there was a meme about that that shared around, and that wasn't good. ESPN Plus closing out 2019 with 6.6 million subscribers. I would say above projections, but UFC was lauded as a big reason for that. Obviously, the exclusive on pay-per-view, but all the other shows and everything there, that they had a very strong close to 2019, and the UFC was a big part of that. There was a UFC 248 press conference where Israel Adesanya and Yoel Romero did a bizarre dance-off that is worth finding, going out of your way to find. Chris Weidman, after his speaking of Dominic Reyes, after Chris Weidman got knocked out flat by Dominic Reyes in front of my very eyes in UFC Boston in 2019, decided he was going to return back to middleweight. The Texas Commission, speaking of Texas, they overturned, if you guys remember this, the Tito Ortiz-Alberto Del Rio quote-unquote fight for Combate Americas. Texas Commission overturning it to a no decision, which was kind of strange temporarily. No one was really sure why, and Ortiz later said it was a muscle relaxer use was the reason it was held up. He was saying everything was cleared, but there was a issue there that raised some eyebrows and some interest. And then the aforementioned Rafael Lovato relinquishing the Bellator middleweight title and a Gegard Mousasi versus Douglas Lima super fight, as they said, was set up for the vacant belt. Thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, the last thing you mentioned, again, I didn't touch on it in the first month, but yeah, it's kind of tragic what happened to Rafael Lovato. Hopefully he, I don't think he's going to fight again, but hopefully he'll be able to live a relatively normal life and, to find something else to do with his life, probably training or something
He's talking about it. As of this past week, he's saying he's been checked out and cleared by the Cleveland Clinic and others, so there is a chance.
Oh, well, I mean, good for him if he does, because that, that was something. I mean, that guy was definitely one of the world's top middleweights. And he was a guy that I generally like to see fight. And there's not many of those guys in that organization. The ESPN story and ESPN Plus story was actually pretty big. I mean, I think Disney Plus had a lot to do with that, too, because I think there was like a bundle that you would get both services. But UFC definitely was a driver, especially early on. And I think that huge subscriber number had a lot to do with the success that ESPN Plus would have with UFC pay-per-views this year, where, the numbers where ESPN was kind of hiding them in 2019, and we're sure we'll get into it as this year goes on, but the numbers started to come out because they're actually good. And they seem to have gotten to a similar level to what they were at, I would say, for the non-Conor fights or a huge show for whatever reason, they're kind of their baseline is about where it was in, I'd say, maybe 2013, 2014, in that era, like right before things kind of bottomed out. In that probably 100,000 for the really weak shows and 200,000 for your average shows, it's kind of what they seem to be at. Although I do think that when you have a show like a couple of these ones we just had, I think it would go below that. And I don't think we're going to be getting those numbers anytime soon, but that's, it's big for them. And, in between that and the TV ratings, I think ESPN is very happy with the partnership that they have with UFC. And I do believe that either ESPN or someone else is going to pay a lot of money for their rights if they don't outright buy the company from Endeavor.
Second chunk here. John Jones said it was inevitable. He was going to work with WWE someday, as pro wrestling continues to be the junk drawer for every celebrity that once they're done their career, they say they're going to go and do pro wrestling. Invicta said they were going to do some trials of open scoring at a show in March. UFC made some cuts, including, Paul, your favorite and former tough winner, past tough winner, Brad Katona, and also Juan Adams following his loss to Greg Hardy. busted by USADA, Michael Prejeras, and Ovin St. Preux. Fabricio Werdum's suspension was finally up, and he was going to be fighting the aforementioned Alexei Olenek at UFC 250. BJ Penn's sad decline continued, hospitalized and under suspicion for DUI after a crash. There was a story in the Miami Herald that mentioned that Nate Diaz was involved in this marijuana bust or something along those lines. It was kind of like one of those like holy shit stories. And it turns out it wasn't Nate Diaz at all. It was another MMA fighter. For some reason, the reporter just made the jump or got wrong information, but said he was exploring legal action after all that. UFC was probably a decision they wish they could take back or at least delay. UFC paid out $300 to $350 million to its various cabal of celebrity investors. I think it was like 2018, maybe 16 or something like that, when they announced that all these celebrities were quote unquote investing in UFC. And it wasn't like, you know, it was one of those kind of like, it was like, you know, Tom Brady, Giselle, Serena Williams. There was like a long list of these celebrities that was just
Damon
like,
Affleck, I think.
Yeah, it was just, it wasn't like they were all like, we want to invest in UFC. It was like just kind of like on paper they did, but it wasn't like they were like aggressively doing it. It was whatever. Anyway, they got paid out pretty handsomely, and as UFC would find out a couple months later, as everything went to hell, they probably wish that they had held on to some of that money. Zuffa Boxing appears dead. Dana White said he was planning 2020 events for Oregon, San Francisco, and Seattle. Good luck with that. UFC 250, I mentioned that Cejudo Aldo fight title fight was planned, and nobody liked it as they made it official. And there was also talk about Amanda Nunes defending the featherweight championship on that show as well. The UFC 251 got that aforementioned Volkanovski-Holloway rematch, and also Valentina Shevchenko against Joanne Calderwood for the flyweight title. UFC Oklahoma got Chris Weidman versus Jack Hermanson as a main event. UFC Portland getting Alistair Overeem versus Walt Harris as a headliner, and also Michelle Waterson versus Carla Esparza. And then, as we creep into March, ONE closed their Singapore show that they had with fans due to coronavirus. They still were planning on having the show and held it, but with no fans in attendance, in a lot of foreshadowing. Thoughts on that, Chunk?
Yeah, that last one, I saw somebody describing this. It's kind of like when you're watching a movie, it's like a disaster movie, and people are just talking, living their normal lives, and you see like something in the background on the TV that, you know, it's there for a reason, and they're talking about something that is coming. And you know it's coming because you're watching it, but the people on the screen have no idea. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I feel here. It's like, oh yeah, we heard about this all, but it's whatever. It's in Singapore. It's no big deal. And I remember even New Japan at that time was, you know, they were talking about not running shows, and maybe they already had stopped by that point in pro wrestling. I just remember thinking, yeah, like, I mean, hopefully it doesn't come here, but you know, I mean, I'm sure we'll be ready for it, and nothing like that's going to happen. Like, I mean, it wasn't until middle of March when basically in one day, March 11th, when the world just kind of, our world kind of changed overnight, not even overnight, like, you know, at the stroke of, you know, a press conference in the NBA. And, So yeah, that was, looking back now, it's like, yeah, it was there and it was coming. Other than that, like the cuts, you mentioned Brad Katona. Yeah, he's from Winnipeg, and it was too bad. I mean, tough winner not that long ago, and he looked not bad in his first couple UFC fights, but then he had a couple losses, and one of them he looked pretty bad in. So, you know, UFC is basically, Ryan talked about this on our podcast, because right now they're actually in the middle of doing a huge round of cuts. And he's basically saying, like, when these guys get signed, they get four fights. And if they lose two of them, you know, they kind of cut bait, and then they can go on the regional scene and they can come back if they look good, or you don't do anything with them. And the guys that are good, they keep on. And if you've got the aging veterans, they basically just kind of get rid of them as soon as their contract's up or as soon as they get a chance to. So that's kind of what you're seeing now. We weren't seeing it here yet then. And you mentioned OSP. I had totally forgotten he got busted by USADA, and I don't know if I don't remember if he got off or if it was just a short suspension.
Three months.
Yeah. So it must've been similar to what we talked about in the previous month with Diego.
Sanchez, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, you know, and again, it's another USADA, instance. Perseris, I mean, anybody that's ever saw him, you know, I don't think anybody was surprised that he popped, is his nickname, the Tractor. You know, so yeah. And then we saw, you know, a whole bunch of fights that were planned for a whole bunch of venues that most of the fights ended up happening, but none of them where they were supposed to, as we'll get into.
So we turn to March, and there's two sections here, pre-Rona and post-Rona. So we'll do the pre-Rona stuff first, as you know, everyone was planning ahead for a normal spring and summer when it comes to events and different shows and all this stuff. So UFC Norfolk, Devson Figueiredo, missed weight. This was the men's flyweight, vacant flyweight title fight, Devson Figueiredo against Joe Benavidez. Figueiredo made weight, ineligible to fight, and then all of a sudden still knocked out Joseph Benavidez in the second round. Flyweight title still vacant, and of course later reported that because really they wanted to do a rematch because they had zero other options in order to slot someone in there. So they couldn't exactly punish Figueiredo, and he would have a nice result coming up in a couple months. UFC 248, we had the Zhang Weili Yuen and Jacek Fight of the Year Classic with, I put Alien Head. That's the best way to describe Yuen Jacek after this. It was insane. Something that looked like it was Photoshop, but it wasn't. It's just amazing. Clear to me, like a top Fight of the Year candidate, if not the Fight of the Year. Amazing stuff. Israel Adesanya defeating Rogelio Romero, defending his title in a very boring title fence. People did not like this fight at all. It was boring, not good, and both guys kind of blamed each other. So you imagine how well that went over. Sean O'Malley returning, looked impressive in a victory. Brian Ortega and the Korean Zombie got in a backstage altercation in a bathroom due to supposedly Ortega slapped this K-pop star, and the Zombie didn't take kindly to that. It was this whole thing happened in a bathroom. I remember hearing this as it was like, not as it was happening, but afterwards, and like, it's like, what is going on? Such a weird description of things that were going on. Anthony Rumble Johnson, apparently his marijuana trade or whatever he was doing didn't work out so well. So we wanted to return to UFC as a heavyweight. UFC announced they were going to return to Dublin in August, and Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till was going to be the main event. UFC was going to return to Borat's home of Kazakhstan in June with Peter Yan versus Mara Moraes as a main event. UFC San Diego getting a fight, what would be a Fight of the Year candidate, and Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker as a main event. Mays UFC 250 getting Amanda Nunes defending her featherweight titles we mentioned before against Felicia Spencer, coming off one win. UFC Saskatoon getting Curtis Blaydes versus Alexander Volkov as a main event. Edson Barbosa asking to be released from the UFC and then, of course, deciding to drop to featherweight and then sign for a Josh Emmett fight instead. So amazing how that all works out. And then as we're in a roller coaster, we're kind of, you know, creeping to the top of the crest. The Oregon Commission said that they had no coronavirus protocol in place for UFC Portland. And this was on March 9th that they said this, March 9th. And a lot was to happen there. Before we get into the Rona, thoughts in that first section?
Yeah, again, I guess I'll start with the last one. I mean, what, you know, that was UFC Portland, which is not very far from Seattle, which was the epicenter. And at that time, I mean, really, it was the one area of the country that everyone was kind of focused on because the case numbers were starting to get out of control, you know, at that point. And the fact that they were planning to run in that part of the country and then there's no protocol in place, it's a little bit alarming. You mentioned the UFC Saskatoon. I think I was in the process of, trying to get, maybe going to that.
Yeah.
To credential. Cause it's a bit of a drive from here, but it's probably the closest place that they're going to run. And other than if they ran a show in Winnipeg. So, and I was at the last show they did in Saskatoon, the Ortega Korean Zombie altercation, I feel like there was something else that happened on a previous show that was maybe in the Southeast between those two. And this was kind of a extension of that, unless I'm just making that up in my own mind. But I just remember, you know, as bizarre as that sounded, it really got me pumped up for that fight. So, and we would eventually, I believe, get to see that. So I mean, that Zhang Weili and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I mean, that was, that was definitely the fight of the year for me. I heard, you know, there was a couple other fights that people would bring up later in the year, and I would always go back to this one. And this, as it turns out, I mentioned earlier UFC 247, but this is actually not only the last pay-per-view with fans, but it was the last show with fans. And we got a classic, like you said, in that, and a lot of damage that they both took, but you know, I think they both improved their stock a lot, and were bigger stars coming out of it.
All right, so let's get in the coaster. We're going down the track. So yeah. I'm just gonna kind of go over this. This is in order, and this is probably the only way to do this justice. And then we'll discuss. So
yeah,
starts with UFC Brazil. It was announced it was going to be held behind closed doors. No fans, what they call closed doors, but no fans in Brazil. This thing is just going on all over the place. So I believe the Saturday after the Rudy Gobert NBA mm-hmm. press conference you mentioned, which was on a Wednesday night, if I remember right.
Dynamite was on.
Dynamite was on in Salt Lake City. Yep. And so UFC on that Saturday, UFC Brazil, Kevin Lee missed weight, got submitted by Charles Oliveira. In the third round, Nikita Krylov defeating Johnny Walker by decision. Of course, Johnny Walker was just this, you know, huge prospect going into the year or in 2019 and was really making some waves, and then kind of just hit, I don't want to say rock bottom, but hit the skids, and Nikita Krylov picking up a win there. Gilbert Burns, a name that would get some attention later on, TKOing Damian Maia in the first round. Of UFC Brazil, again, a kind of bizarre show because there were no fans. Obviously, they were still in this big arena, so it wasn't like it is in the Apex or even at Fight Island. So it was kind of just like, we have to hold the show. There was so many questions about this and not a lot of answers. Soon after that, various MMA shows around the world began being canceled due to the coronavirus. Bellator canceling their show in Connecticut hours before due to the virus and concerns about that. UFC was undeterred, moving two shows to Las Vegas from Portland and one of the other places they were going to run. But London was still on the books. UFC then moved the other four shows, and Dana White was insistent that no matter what, these fights will happen. He was trying to figure out some way to keep on the schedule and do these shows. UFC London was then moved to the United States. That meant that Leon Edwards was out of the Tyron Woodley main event because he was given, as he put it, 3 hours notice to fly to the United States and basically just kind of get things going. And he had no chance to talk to his team. How else is going to work out? Do the travel bans and issues and all this stuff? Really, it was a question of coming back. How is that going to work? So he had to be taken out of that fight. 11 fights were canceled due to travel issues, and UFC was scrambling to fill that show with a new location. UFC then later postponed 3 shows, but undeterred again, UFC 249 was still on, and Dana White at that time was looking at tribal ground in the state of Oklahoma. USADA, speaking of undeterred, still testing fighters during the pandemic as things were just like going crazy and people not knowing what's going on. They were still testing fighters, which at this point just seems 100. At any point during this, it seems ridiculous, but at that point, it was just 100% absurd for them to be doing this. And then the New York State Athletic Commission shutting down UFC 249. I should say New York State, because the state stopped doing any type of public gatherings or events. So UFC 49 in Brooklyn, New York was done, of course, headlined by Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson. So, and we'll get to that in a second. Fighters were on both sides of the coronavirus fence and really like, should we fight? Should we not fight? How do we do this? Guys and girls want to get paid, but their training was shut down. How do we do this was such a huge question. At that point, the UFC wasn't really offering much in the way of knowledge or help because, you know, when you're in your training camps, you're kind of out on your own. Cage Warriors was still set planning on holding a show in England. Combat Night, an organization in Florida, held an event with no fans in it, and I guess went quite successfully, paving the way for UFC to return to debut in the state late couple months down the road. Dana White on the media during the pandemic, quote unquote, the wimpiest people on earth. He refused to talk about any type of USADA or any type of virus testing protocols for these shows he was going to have coming up. And he said, the less that the media knows, the better, and that you can't hide from the virus. You can't hide in your basement. And he said, look, if I get it, I get it. And he refused to disclose UFC 249 location. So very, I dare say, Trumpian in the way he kind of approached some of this stuff, but was completely arrogant and completely just undeterred. You have to appreciate him, you know, trying to push forward, but at some point you have to kind of embrace reality, but he refused to do it. The big talk about will they, won't they with UFC 249, how everyone had an opinion. Joe Rogan said he isn't going no matter what. Dana White saying they have 4 to 5 locations, that the virus is driven by media and fear. Daniel Cormier was saying he was going to have to retire if he had to wait until the fall to fight Stipe Miocic for a third time. Obviously, that was not the case. And then UFC 249, the main event fell apart. No Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Magomedov. And the reason was that the lightweight champion of the world was told he had to fly to Russia because it looked like they were going to do the show somewhere over there. And then, so he said, based on what the UFC told him, he did that. And then due to the travel ban, he couldn't fly out of Russia. He was stuck. So now you had a new opponent needed for UFC 249. You have no location. Justin Gaethje's name is brought up. Jorge Masvidal's name is brought up. Dustin Poirier's name is brought up. It was a question of whether they could do it in Florida based on what I just said about that Cage Warriors, or not the, Combat Night promotion. There was rumors about Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington moving to UFC 249 because Covington was talking all types of noise and people are excited about that. They were looking for any port in a storm, so to speak, for some sort of fight amid the craziness of the pandemic. Chael Sonnen held a Submission Underground show in a converted grain silo. This sounds like just fever dream theater. Bellator deciding they were going to postpone all May events. And then finally, Dana White insisting that no UFC people were going to lose their jobs amidst all this.
Whew. Wow.
Yeah.
Like listening to this and reading it as you're reading it, so much came back. I just remember, like, we have our Facebook group that we've talked about in the past that you're a part of. And I remember a lot of discussions around a lot of this going on as it was happening in real time. And I remember, like, having arguments with people. And at that time, everyone was kind of, I don't want to say picking sides, but, you know, some people were just like, the show's got to go on and we got to figure out a way to do this. And then other people were just like, no, we just got to stop. Like, just stop.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, we were at that point where, you know, we didn't figure out that we had to stop. So everyone was talking about, you know, what are you going to do? I remember that Bellator thing and it was just like leading up to the show, like, there's no way they can do this. They can't. And I remember arguing, Ryan, they can't. And then they didn't. So, and it was, I believe it was the casino that they were supposed to fight in that basically pulled the plug at that point. Yeah. But then to their credit, they were the first ones to just go ahead and cancel everything. That you brought up that Cage Warriors thing, and it reminded me of something. They did have a show on March 20th, which is a full 9 days after, professional sports shut down in North America. And that show, basically, a lot of the fighters that were supposed to fight on the UFC London show ended up on that show. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the main event was Bartosz Fabinski and Darren Stewart. Darren Stewart's a UFC fighter. Fabinski was a guy that was supposed to make his debut, and that was actually an official UFC fight. Mm-hmm. So it's on their UFC records. It's an interesting bit of trivia. It was a UFC fight that happened on a Cage Warriors show.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you don't believe me, look it up. But I remember
that
talking.
That vaguely sounds familiar now. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that was, the one non, kind of COVID-related. It was COVID-related, but it was, an interesting bit of trivia that, that we're probably likely not to see again, hopefully. And then, just that Dana White, I remember you making a post about Dana and, what do you guys think about this? You're airing the interview and it was just like, wow. Like he just sounded, like you said, Trumpian, just crazy. But again, to his credit, the UFC has really developed a strategy for this. They've ran since, they would, as we'll get into, they started running again a month and a half after all this. Mm. And they basically have gone every single week, sometimes more than once a week. And a lot of people have failed tests, but the show keeps going on and they've got plans to deal with it. As near as we can tell, nobody's catching it during the fights, so they're getting it on their own when they're training, and then UFC's picking it up on it, and so that's good. But I mean, as for there'll be lots of time to discuss all that. Just like with all this craziness, like every day it was like, oh, it's going to be here. It's going to be there. It's going to be in Tai Chi Fighting Palace. You know, they just, Dana was just insistent on getting these shows in, and you could tell he was probably internally going crazy. Like, why aren't we doing this? Like, I'm sure, you know, he just, why, no reason to cancel. Why are we doing this? And yeah, I remember that Chael Sonnen show, and everyone just, people watched it, and it was just like, it was almost like the early days of no holds barred fighting, when it was like illegal, and you know, it was just, it was so wrong, but we had to watch it. And really at that point it was like the first anything sports related that anybody was going to see. So I think a lot of people watched that wouldn't have watched anything, just because they were so starved for anything.
It was wild. And we'll get more into kind of how things happen, including Tachi Palace and that whole thing, when we talk in about April shows and the return. But yeah, reading over that again, if it reads like a fever dream, like fan fiction of like, and telling you there, I mean, there's going to be dozens of books and documentaries made about the last year.
And thing was like, what, 10 days maybe?
It was crazy. Yeah. I was kind of just going through this, and it was just every single day. It was like, are they, like, what's going on with this? And I can't wait to get to the Tachi Palace thing in April, because that whole thing was just batshit crazy and completely whitewashed in a UFC documentary series that they had.
Yeah.
Which caused me just to kind of stop watching it, because I'm like, what am I going to get out of this? I may pick it up again at some point, but like, they completely skipped over this whole thing. And I can understand why, but look, I don't know. That just kind of didn't really sit that well with me.
Just wait for the ESPN 30 for 30.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right, let's go. There's a few other notes in the month, and we'll call it good. John Jones. No matter in a pandemic, fall.
Yeah.
John Jones is going to get in trouble with the law, arrested for aggravated DWI, a firearm charge, etc. Pleaded guilty, avoided jail time, and admitted to an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. No shit. The funniest thing was he had, I think on Twitter the day before, a couple days before, was basically like telling people, yeah, it's important to stay home, whatever he said, like pleading, you know, for people to stay home. It's not so bad, you know, complaining about, he may have shared a meme or something about that, about, you know, our forefathers fought for the right for you to sit home and watch Netflix or whatever. And then this happened. It was just the high comedy. UFC pushing back that Valentina Shevchenko, Joanne Calderwood fight from UFC 251, which at that point was still going to happen due to Shevchenko getting hurt. Paulo Costa's doctor was suspended by USADA. He was called a fake doctor by Dana White, saying that he was cleared to fight. And there was this whole kind of controversy around that, which is funny. UFC San Diego at that point was still on, was getting Corey Sandhagen versus Aljamain Sterling. And then finally, Cody Garbrandt pulling out of a UFC Columbus co-main event due to kidney issues. And that was March. Any other thoughts? Obviously, it wasn't much in that last section, but any other final thoughts on the month that was March 2020?
Well, if you're listening to this show, you're a member of the website, and I encourage you to go to the board and read in the MMA section, and it's not a super active section of the board, so it's not hard to find. I think it's on the second page. There is a thread called, I want to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, John Jones arrested again. It's a great thread. It's well worth the time it'll take you to read it. I'll just leave it at that. It was nice to see, you know, in amidst all this chaos, that John Jones still was able to find the time to get out and do what John Jones does. So it was a little bit of normalcy that we all got to see. And I want to thank John for that. other than that, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was obviously not a lot in the way of non-COVID related news. But, you know, we were talking about some fights that, you know, we were going to hopefully get at some point. Paulo Costa's doctor was a funny story, and Dana White's reaction is just typical Dana White, and you know, you got the impression that Dana would probably just as soon be rid of USADA if he could, but it's a necessary evil, even though it's probably more evil than necessary. Evil is not the right word, but you know what I mean. And yeah, and other than that, yeah, not a lot to say there. I was very happy for John Jones, and I encourage you all to read that thread.
Good stuff. Well, Paul, we had an hour. I got you out of here, an hour, almost on the dot. Could have gone to any of these topics for like another, you know, half an hour easy, as we could have.
But it was good. It was a nice refresh.
Yeah, and there's a lot more to talk about. Again, Itachi Palace. I cannot wait to talk about that. But before we let you go, give a chance to go ahead and plug social media, the good work you do for us, and also Fight Game and all the stuff you're writing and also talking about for them. Go ahead.
Yeah. So as you said, I do the ratings articles for everything but Monday Night Raw, which that's pro wrestling related. So this week, and who knows, maybe for, you know, the time being, we've been covering Impact ratings as they seem to be relevant once again with the stuff that's going on there. I cover the UFC shows for the website pretty much every other week. I would be doing the upcoming pay-per-view with Divison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. And Fight Game Media, we have the Facebook group and then the podcast network that's starting up, which is, you mentioned, on Patreon. So if you just Google search Fight Game Media Network, it'll be the first thing that comes up. And it's basically a network of content creators that are, you know, doing fight game, we call it. So it's boxing, MMA, pro wrestling. Right now, it's probably more leaning towards the pro wrestling, but there is the podcast that Ryan Frederick and I do that is exclusively MMA. Like Josh mentioned, there's three tiers. There's a fourth tier, but when you read into it, it's more like it's almost like becoming a member of the website, like learning how to be a podcaster, learning how to be a writer, all these different things. So it's mainly the three tiers, the $5, $10, and $15 tier. And Ryan and I's show is in the $10 tier, which is one podcast a day covering, you know, different subjects. So ours is on Tuesdays. There's a boxing podcast, and then there's three different wrestling ones that are completely different. So you got a Japan one, you've got a classic wrestling one, and then just kind of a current one. So that's all. And then the Fight Game website itself is just, you know, it's kind of more like a blog, but it's a lot of really excellent content on there. And there's one that a guy named JD Oliva wrote that's getting a lot of play. And it was basically a couple weeks ago, he interviewed Don Callis and Kenny Omega, which basically previewed this angle before it actually happened. And so it's actually getting a lot of traffic now, people going back and reading it, where Callis just basically outlined everything like that was in those two promos that just aired. So it's really cool, and it's fun to be a part of. And of course, the Observer site is my home. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm always happy to do these shows with you. And hit me up on Twitter, Paul Ace Fontaine, or on Facebook, Paul Fontaine.
Good stuff. Yes, looking forward to the rest of the series. Again, we do one of these per week. And next week, April, May, and June. What a bizarre time to be an MMA fan, or human being in general, but especially an MMA fan. Boy, buckle up for what's to come. Paul, thanks so much for joining you. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine, as always. You can check his work out on this year's website and also on Fight Game Media as well. And if you have a couple extra bucks, hey, support their Patreon, check their stuff out, and all that good stuff as well. And of course, you'll be hearing Paul over the next couple of weeks on this series. Again, it's one of my favorite ones to do, just because, you know, there's so many things that happened in the year that we just tend to forget about. And like I've said in previous episodes, I want to try to do one of these for wrestling as well. It's a little bit less clean to do it, but the way that kind of I do all the headline, do all the research, I need to find a comparable way to do it for wrestling that's easy to do. Obviously, there's a ton of resources in like the Wrestling Observer newsletter, but because there's not like headlines, it's easy to kind of miss some stuff and all that. So I'm still trying to work that out. So I don't know if it's going to happen for this year, but I think maybe in some form or fashion, at least do some sort of general look back at the year in pro wrestling as well. And let's see, as I record this on Sunday afternoon, this outro, I embarrassingly have not seen any of the UFC pay-per-view from last night, UFC 249, I think it was. I can't remember what the name of the pay-per-view was at this point. But from what I've read, it is a great show from top to bottom, so I'll be checking that out a little bit probably tonight and also tomorrow as well. And yeah, it is just one of those ones I was not that excited going in for and missed the whole thing completely, but I'll be rectifying that. I need to also check out some of the fights of the year. As I go through the year review list, there's a lot of fights along the way that I just missed. I think it was like you know, Frankie Edgar versus Pedro Munhoz, that main event, that was controversial. I've never seen that, that fight. There's a lot of just different, like, ones that kind of stick out that I need to catch up on. Again, as we've talked about here before, it's hard. It's hard when every single weekend there's all these fights, and you're trying to also, you know, spend time with your family, watch other shows, watch other sports on TV, listen to podcasts, do your work. I mean, there's so many things that it's hard to kind of catch up, but it's one of my goals for the year ahead is to kind of try to be better about that and get back in this, in my routine of things with watching all the UFC fights from the weekend if I don't happen to catch them live that night. Easier said than done, but that is one of my goals for the year ahead. You know, lofty goals, as it were. Trying to think, I think that's about it. And obviously, you know, plenty of news here on the website, plenty of podcasts to listen to, and you know, I greatly appreciate the fact you spent any time with me or any time with any of our great podcast guests and podcast hosts on this here website. Again, as we speak, I am taking on Brian Alvarez in the Wrestling Observer Figure Four Online Fantasy Football League. We are there are four teams in the finals. I am one of them. Sorry, the semifinals. I am one of them. And it's a 2-week process. So the total score, I guess, over the next 2 weeks, we'll win it. I'm confident. Brian talking shit on Brian and Vinny's show. Vinny didn't even know that I owned or I ran the Dirt Sheets franchise. That's my team name. And even though I steamrolled him about, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So, you know, all the Pacific Northwest guys talk a lot of shit. You know, they think they're all that. Mm-mm. Looking forward to taking out Brian here in the next 2 weeks and doing it for all the ham and eggers and the humanoids like you and I out there listening. So until next week, have a great one. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.